Inspire, educate, connect. This is Yoga Digest, a vibrant community of passionate change makers.
Hello, everyone. Thank you for being here. I'm Kim Bauman, founder of the One Love Movement, a nonprofit dedicated to serving kids in need. I am so incredibly honored to bring you One Love Heroes, a podcast show about ordinary people with extraordinary stories. We'll bring you true stories of love, hope, and courage from around the world, some from people you already know and others from people you'll want to know. Thank you so much for listening. Welcome to episode number 3 of One Love Heroes with Jason Mraz, where we are recording live from his home studio. I first crossed paths with Jason about 4 or so years ago because he showed up in one of my yoga classes that I was teaching. I was so floored that I literally froze, and so I didn't say hello, and I ignored him and acted like he wasn't there because I was so incredibly nervous. And so for me to actually be here in his studio recording this is literally a miracle in itself. A few months ago, I kept having these really strange thoughts that would enter my mind, and I kept thinking, oh my God, Jason's going to somehow make my birthday really special. And not in the sense that he was going to do something for me, but something was going to happen with him that would make me feel really special on my birthday. And I had no idea what that was about, and it actually threw me off because it was so strange and it was so odd to even have those thoughts in my mind. And so after weeks of me pleading with him to come on my podcast show, he finally agreed to it. And one of the dates that he proposed happened to be May 13th, which is my actual birthday. And so here we are today on May 13th. And I was just so incredibly mesmerized by the way that life can unravel like that. So you have this thought, you have these wishes, or you have, you know, whatever's going on. And then over time, you look back and everything unraveled in this really magical way. And so I'm just really grateful for how amazing life can be like that and give us these very special moments that are out of the blue. Hmm. I'm not going to read through Jason's bio for the sake of timing, and also because I'm assuming that everyone pretty much knows who he is. And if you don't know who he is, no worries. You can just look him up in Google. There's lots of information on him. So without further ado, introducing Jason Mraz.
Thank you, Kim. Happy birthday to you.
Thank you.
You're very welcome.
I'm so excited to get to be here. I wish everyone listening to this could see how amazing his home studio is, and it's very peaceful with the orchards around us, with the birds, and it's got a very homey, creative flair to it. So it's a really neat space that you created here.
Thanks.
So I want you to know that this entire week, I was actually since we had messaged each other about 3 weeks ago to set this up, I've been just unglued and excited about this. And I've been nervous, I've been excited, I've been anxious, I've been throwing up, not literally, but feeling like that. Uh-huh. And it's been just a roller coaster of emotions. And so what I want to know from you is, I'm wondering, when have you felt this way about something? When have you been in my shoes?
Oh, many times. I feel like while I might dabble in a lot of different things, at the core of it, I'm a creator. And I like to create things. And so anytime I'm about to unveil a creation, whether it's a new song, whether it's a joke, or it's an experiment in my garden, I mean, that doesn't make me as anxious. But I do a lot of collaborating. And one example would be I got a chance to work with Willie Nelson.
Oh, wow.
About 6 years ago. And I'd met him a few times, but this was going to be a day in the studio. And it took a lot of setting up, and I'm just very nervous because the day finally came. And it's just surreal when someone you've been able to view from afar, mm-hmm. observe, lets you into that world, and you want to show up and be your best so that you can meet whatever you project is their best. And Willie walks in the door. He looked stunning, like an icon. Leather jacket, boots, and cowboy hat, and a doobie in his hand, burning. And he hands it to me immediately. Like, it's the first thing that happens. Instead of a handshake, he's like, here you go. He's like, let's do this. So not only did I have to really show up and be my best, but I had to do it under the influence of marijuana at the same time. My technicians, my producer, they weren't as savvy in the medicinal arts, and they were useless. They were on the couch. They had couch lock, and I was behind the controls working with Willie Nelson. It was surreal, and we got through it together because I feel like I just tried to show up and play at his level. Yeah.
That sounds amazing. So how long ago was this again? Did you already
that
say
was
that?
2010 or 11.
2010. Oh, yeah. Okay. Great.
Yeah, and I've since had a few more run-ins with him, and it's lovely.
Uh-huh.
It's lovely. And that's maybe that's something I've discovered through life is no one's really a stranger. We just haven't been introduced.
Yeah. Oh, I like that.
Yeah.
I like that. Were you, what was the, as you were driving to go meet him, what was that like for you?
Oh, that's the most exciting part because your imagination is taking you down crazy paths.
Yeah,
you know,
for sure.
You're inventing conversations you're going to have and what it's going to sound like. And yeah, that can be applied to any situation. I get that when you go surfing, like, oh my gosh, it's going to be so big and it's going to be scary. But then you get there and it's mild and it's a ton of fun.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. When I was driving here, I hit a lot of traffic and whenever I would hit those gridlock spaces, I was like, oh, it just gave me like a sense of relief. Like, oh, maybe I won't get there. Just that feeling of, oh, maybe it won't turn out because I actually felt safer.
Absolutely.
I felt safer not getting to be here. Does that make sense?
That is a great thing to mention because that's very real. Mm-hmm. Very real. I thought the same thing. I saw your email earlier with the phone number. I was like, oh yeah, because if we didn't have an ability to communicate, gosh, what if she couldn't make it or that didn't happen? My first thought was, well, okay, I'd go finish planting the rose bush and move on to my video thing. Like, it was a safe thing, so.
Yeah, for sure.
And I think that's great to acknowledge because we can miss so many brilliant opportunities if we let safe and comfort always win.
For sure.
You know, and we live in a very comfortable society where entertainment and our comforts are, they take precedent. You know, I was just hanging out with some people earlier who were talking about how to get the best, you know, access to all the hit television shows. You know, do you use Apple TV or Amazon or what are you using, YouTube, blah, blah, blah. And everyone had a very, at least in this setting that I was at, they knew how to get the best results so they could get the entertainment, you know. And I think the same can be said with get the best results for maybe our food pleasures or just the comforts, our luxuries. And you compare that with, well, how do we get the best results in, say, at the city hall so that our city can have some improvements? Or how do we get the best results in our U.S. government? Or how do we get the best results for equality? And those are much harder, I would say. But then again, we don't put our energy on that as easily as we have with, say, Wi-Fi everywhere. You know, why can't there be free water, clean water everywhere? You know, but maybe it's safer and more comfortable to sit on the couch and just
and not know that people don't have clean water.
Exactly.
I love that. That's a really good point. A very good point. So then, what does it look like for you to come out of your comfort zone? Like, whether it's in something small or anything grandiose, like, what is that like for you? Or what is something that you really have worked on to come out of your comfort zone? Because I know for myself, it can be something as small as today I'm not going to have coffee just for one day. And that, like, greatly puts me out of my comfort zone because I'm the biggest coffee fan in the whole wide world. And then other things that have been hugely out of my comfort zone is connecting with people like you, which every time, you know, if I see your name pop up for a message, I'm like, and I have to figure out, like, I'm immediately in my uncomfortable zone to respond, to be myself. And so for me, it's, you know, keeping who I am and keeping my truth inside of any situation.
Okay. Yeah, I've I I try to go with the flow. Fielding requests is a big challenge for me, and I have a lot of different avenues that mm-hmm. I'm creating, and all those avenues have people that help me field requests, because mm-hmm. otherwise there'd be a lot of requests. And I personally love to make to see everybody happy, and I would overwhelm myself if I answered every request. So
for sure,
I step out of my comfort zone at times. Almost every time I go into those channels to look at those requests and see mm-hmm. what's needed of me. And then to get through that, what makes me feel like, okay, I'm out of my comfort zone, but I know I'm going to get through it, is I try to separate the actual task from my likes and my dislikes, mm-hmm. from is this going to be hard or not? That really doesn't matter. That's almost like my ego saying, well, I don't know how to do this. Mm-hmm. But I know that if I just go with the flow, I'll learn how to do it. I'll just start wherever I start and figure it out as I go. So I like that feeling of life begins outside of your comfort zone. I really
For sure.
Do. Yeah, I like that feeling.
For sure. I also am working on, practicing yoga or taking some sort of fitness class outside of what I know. Mm. And I get so much anxiety from that. Do you have a regular practice of your own that you take on, or do you practice here at your house?
I practice here at my house, which...
Oh, you do?
I do. Yeah.
And that's very disciplined.
The whole point of doing the yoga teacher training is where we really got properly introduced.
Yeah.
Was so that I could take all that yummy wisdom that every time I went to a yoga studio, a yoga teacher would blow my mind and give me a tool that would completely transform not only my day, but I'd be able to carry it on. And having had the ability to travel all around the world in music, I got to visit yoga studios all over the world. And when I'm home, I was traveling down to Carlsbad to the studio there, Mantra. And after a while, I just thought, I shouldn't have to do this out there. Like, I really want yoga to exist in me. I want to have that connection in the flow of life. And I've been to enough workshops where I met people then and saw that, wow, they really do have their own personal practice. Like, that's where you want to get. And it's not even about the practice. I think the practice is what you do before you hit the main stage.
Mm-hmm.
In the main stage, you want to forget everything you practice and just play, right? Just want to play. You're not want to play your rehearsed stuff. So I look at practice as an opportunity for me to prepare my body for the day, to tune my mind in for the day, so that I don't bring who knows whatever my mind wants to do. Bad dreams, yesterday's garbage, fears of the stuff that have mm-hmm. to come up. I just look at it as a tuning in and a body preparation too, because I know I'm going to be on my feet and I'm going to be high and I'm going to be low on the ground. Mm-hmm. I'm going to be talking a lot and I'm going to be this. So, and if I miss that practice in the mm-hmm. morning, why do I feel tense later that day or sluggish, or why did I get angry? You know, I shouldn't have that. I can mm-hmm. smooth all that out if I just check in with myself. So that is a little disciplinary practice I give myself, and it's based on what I've learned in yoga teacher training, which is valuable. And I compared it with what I learned many years ago, this thing called the 5 Tibetan rites, which are these 5 little basic exercises that apparently these Tibetan monks do every morning to prepare themselves for their mm-hmm. day. So I kind of weave the 5 Tibetan rites in with Surya Namaskar A and B, and kind of came up with my own thing that just makes me feel good, makes me feel like I'm getting
what you need,
where I need, mm-hmm. opening hips, making sure I feel strong, you know. Some things I always try to do a little bit further, like crow pose or something. I really want to, you know, go longer than a minute in mm-hmm. that. Like, some things I can tell each day that I get stronger and stronger at. Still not doing handstands or anything. But for many years, I was just practice hunting. I wanted to try this, I wanted to try that, I wanted to try this. And I had all these routines and all these practices mm-hmm. I was taking on that I was overwhelmed with. You know, am I supposed to meditate and do yoga and eat this diet and do this and write my grateful affirmations and all this and do my journaling? It's like, that's going to take me 5 hours before my day starts of all these routines. So, and I think it just comes with practice and it comes with time, but you find what works for you so mm-hmm. that it best supports your attitude, your spirit, your behaviors. And yeah, I do that. So now I spend less time in the car driving to yoga studios, and I can just step outside in this beautiful nature.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. You know, with bedhead and set my little playlist on and just do my thing. And I really love it, and it makes me feel like I can do anything.
Yeah. How long is your ritual? in the morning.
Anywhere from 20 to 45 minutes.
Oh,
depends
I like
on
that.
How deep I go.
Can be short and sweet, or it can
absolutely.
Be...
Absolutely. If I just do the basic exercises, mm-hmm. I can do it all in about 20 minutes, 25 minutes.
Love it.
And that's just kind of doing a flow. Because the five Tibetan rites, you do each exercise 7, 14, or 21 times.
Okay.
So right from the start, you can say, okay, I'm only going to do 7 of these today. Or today I'm going all 21 for all these. Mm-hmm. And then I pair them, you know, with a little vinyasa flow. And
very cool. Wait,
but once you go, really once you break 20, you don't want to stop. You kind of want to go like just a little deeper and gooier.
Right, right.
And stronger.
You it's get nice. Into that mode.
Yeah.
You're in the zone for sure.
Yeah. It started for me, too, on tour.
Mm-hmm.
When in 2009, I was touring very, very heavily.
Mm-hmm.
And a friend I was touring with, she was my monitor tech. She had a family tragedy, so she got off the road and went home and dealt with the loss of her father.
Oh.
And she ended up having a complete career change. She mm-hmm. was in sound, and then she said, you know, I want to learn food. I want to learn more about health. And she became yoga teacher, I believe through Core Power. She became certified yoga teacher. And she came back on the road with us and said, I don't want to do sound, but I want to offer you life support. I want you to eat better, and I want us to do yoga every day. I said, bring it on. And that was really the first time yoga started to show up in my life every single day.
Mm.
And we would do it in the dressing room or sometimes in the venue before the crowd came in, and we'd put our yoga music on the big PA, and we'd turn the lights on, and we'd bless the space with our yoga.
Your practice.
Right before the doors opened and people came and stood in our sweaty spot, right?
And I love it.
I would come home healthier and stronger than I was when I left tour.
Mm-hmm.
And that was a good thing, because prior to that, you'd get home from tour and be tired, sluggish, pale, sick because of just the conditions of travel. And so after I started experiencing that, I knew I needed to also apply that much discipline to my home life.
Mm-hmm.
So there's no reason I shouldn't be at home also treating every day like a performance.
Yeah. Oh, I love that. Treat every day like a performance.
Yeah.
That should be
all
a quote.
The world is a stage. Treat every day like a performance.
I love that. Yeah. So what do you do when your mind tells you that you're less than? How do you navigate? How do you manage that for yourself?
I've learned not to believe it, because in my past, I would identify with it and say, oh, I must be less than, I'm less than. But I hear my cat. My cat thinks he's less than. He wants a little snack.
There he is. I only know him from Instagram.
I'm going to get him a snack. That's Krishna. Hey,
Krishna. Hi, Krishna. Come here. Come here. Is he shy?
Maybe. He's not shy on these snacks.
You only have one cat, right?
Two cats. Jesus and Krishna. Oh, I have a third cat. Big girl. She lives in the house.
Jesus and Krishna?
Yeah. That'll at least keep him from meowing.
Really? Aw. What a cutie.
Yeah.
How did your cats come into your life? Do you have cat stories or no?
Yeah, these two cats came, my former roommate, Billy Galewood. He's also a performer. He was driving back from Arizona and found mm-hmm. Jesus and Krishna as little baby kittens at a rest area, hiding under a dumpster or something. So he threw them in the car and he brought them home. And they were crazy. They were these little feral cats that were hissing and mangy. And within 2 or 3 weeks, they were butter. And now they're the best cats. And I think their feral energy has really helped them survive out here, because there are a lot of predators, whether it's coyotes or hawks or owls and things. But these guys, they're fierce. They know how to adapt. But we also have an indoor cat that we adopted mm-hmm. from the Humane Society, and she has very little athleticism.
She lies around on the couch.
So we're not letting...
And wants to be pet.
She goes outside and sits on the deck, but we don't allow her to wander through the grove, because she'd probably get lost or eaten.
And do the outside cats come indoors and play with her? Okay.
They don't really play mm-hmm. together, but the two boys that are outside, they come and go all day long. They think the doors open by themselves, but really it's us constantly opening the doors. They want to come in for a snack. They want to go out for a snack.
That's awesome. I love it. So cute.
So you had asked, how do I keep mm-hmm. my mind from believing that I'm less than?
Yeah. And does that happen quite often?
Absolutely.
Okay.
So I've written a lot of songs about this, because I feel like it continually comes up. Like, my brain is on its own has this radio station playing or this conversations, and it seems on the left hand it thinks I'm no good. On the right hand, it thinks I'm full of potential and I can do anything. But, and it's taken me years, and I know I'm not final, so I don't know this. I'm sure my perspective on this will change. And it's taken me years to realize that I'm neither of those voices. I'm neither the one that says I'm less than or the one that says I can do anything, because I can hear both of those voices. Does that make sense?
Mm-hmm.
So I must be a deeper-seated soul, even beyond those voices. So I try not to pay any attention to the less-than voices anymore, mm-hmm. because they can totally send me off track. But those voices can also inspire the heck out of me to change my behavior and prove to that voice that I'm less than that I'm greater than. You know what I mean?
Like a competition?
It's like a competition.
Or like, yeah, right.
Yeah.
You're not going to tell me that.
Right. So I've my manager can sometimes give me tough love. You know, I'll turn in some art and he'll have an interesting perspective on it that thinks it could be better.
Mm-hmm.
And my brain immediately says, my stuff isn't any good. You know, why don't you like it as it is? What's wrong with me? What's wrong with it? And so I use that voice then for power. I use it to, how can I go back and look at my art in a different way so that I can share the message so that it lands with other people, that it is great, that it's meaningful, and so that I can also defeat that voice in my head. So how I deal with it, I would say, is I go back into art, mm-hmm. some version of creative expression, rather than just dwell on it.
Mm-hmm.
Journaling is helpful, and I might dwell in my journal. I might see my hand say, what's going on? Why do I feel like crap? Blah, blah, blah.
Mm-hmm.
But eventually, say after two pages of that, your hand and your heart begins to write a new story for yourself.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's one of the brilliant things about writing and about any creative expression is we don't want to write the sad story for ourselves. And you can try, and I guarantee you by the third page you'll find the magic that you really have in you to silence that mm-hmm. less than voice.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know why the less than voice appears. I really don't. Is it from our society? Is it from
yeah.
our parents saying, hey, be quiet, not right now?
Mm-hmm.
Like, is it as simple as that?
I like that question.
Is it little kids on the playground picked on us and
right.
saying, oh, I must not be liked? Or something. Like, where does it come from? But I do think through our life we can choose not to listen to it.
Mm-hmm.
Rylan Engelhart, the founder of Cafe Gratitude, or the one of the owners and operators of Cafe mm-hmm. Gratitude, the
oh,
son of the founders.
Mm-hmm.
The son of the founders. His mother, Jean, said to me, I am are the two most powerful words mm-hmm. in the English language. Be careful what you say after those words, because you will become
Ooh.
That. So if you're saying, I am sorry, it's like, really? Are you sorry? You're sorry? Like, apology is one thing, but to apologize and make something better, that's great. But choosing, I apologize is much stronger than I am sorry, because you're lessening yourself to try to make the other person bigger again.
Mm-hmm.
But I am no good. I am.
I'll never learn.
Terrible artist.
Yeah.
Like, you're mm-hmm. saying that. You are creating that powerful energy with your words, the language that builds your life, your story. So, and again, I've tried to write songs about this. I've tried to shift my language
mm-hmm.
from I am no good to I am amazing. I am grateful. I am here. I am now. I am wow. And I add those types of things to my morning routine when I'm doing my little morning exercises.
Your 20 to 45 minute ritual.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. I get my brain started on that. Say,
yeah.
I am here. I am clear. I am fresh. I am
right.
now. I am wow. I am real.
I am grounded. Yeah.
I am grounded. I am grateful. And I do it almost as like a freestyle. Just try to do as mm-hmm. many as I can, and not one negative word pops in.
Mm.
And it helps. I think it really does help. So we can retrain ourselves.
I love that.
Yeah.
I love that.
To not have to have so many less than voices.
Mm-hmm, for
but
sure.
if you do hear it, you don't have to believe it.
For sure. I love the humanizing of all of this, too. So it's so easy to look at someone like you and think that you have it all, or think that you have everything figured out in life, or that your life is rainbows and butterflies every day. And so I'm curious, are you aware that people look at someone like you and your successes like that? And is there someone in your life, I guess you kind of referenced Willie Nelson earlier, but is there someone in your life that you see that as well?
That I see that it's rainbows and butterflies for them?
Yeah, like you look at certain people and you're like, oh gosh, they've got everything figured out. That'll never be me, or how did they get to that place? And it seems like they're always the picture perfect family or the picture perfect person.
No, maybe 10, 20 years ago I did. Like I might look at Dave Matthews, I was a big fan of.
Mm-hmm.
Still am a big fan, but I don't follow his career as closely as I did when I was a teenager.
Mm-hmm.
But I would look at his life and go, oh my gosh, he's got the band, he's got the stage, he's got the tour, he's buying up all of Virginia, he's got all this properties putting in conservation, like all of that just seemed like a dream, and it must be so easy. And then I go through the steps to pursue a life of like that. And you start to learn how it works and how you get there. And also that even once you arrive, it still takes a lot of work to keep all of that and maintain all of that and to keep the momentum going and to please everyone and to keep everyone also feeling safe and supported. And so I realized then that it's not all rainbows and butterflies for anybody.
Right.
So I then started to look at life as, well, okay, how do they do that? How can... I want to more figure out how it is they did what they did or know more of their backstory, because I don't think rainbows and butterflies really exist, maybe unless you're born to in the billionaire's family. But even then, I'm sure your life
you still have.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I think if you're a human, you're going to suffer.
Yeah, for
sure. To some extent. And so now I just look, if there is anybody I think has it all, I just want to think, well, how could those possibilities, how could I have some of those possibilities
right.
as well?
Shifting your own paradigm.
Mm-hmm.
I had two of my close friends this week say that to me as well, that they feel like I've got everything figured out and that stuff just comes my way. And I was like, what are you talking about me? It just kind of blew me away because like you said, it's not like it just came and then that was amazing and great. It's like people don't understand, you know, the intricacies that happened before that or the steps you took or the anguish or this or that. And so, so I was just interested in hearing your thoughts on that.
Mm-hmm. I didn't give myself any other plan other than to do this life. Now, I didn't know what the life would look like in its details. I never knew it would have a farming aspect or a foundational
mm-hmm.
aspect.
Mm-hmm.
And I didn't even know what my daily practices would look like. I just didn't want to have a day job, quote unquote, day job. I just wanted music
mm-hmm.
to be the thing that I did. And I thought that that would be even just a weekly gig at a coffee shop. As long as it was paying my bills, then I had made it. I didn't have to have any other day job. So I didn't attach myself to any other dream. And I didn't let that dream get deferred by me having a job to do what I needed to do to support that dream. I made the dream the goal. And I was willing to be a starving artist to live that dream. Because for me, being a creator, that's the reward, is seeing new things get created every day. It's not necessarily the monetary return or the applause or any of that. It's, I just love making stuff up.
Mm-hmm.
That to me is, it's like a magic trick.
I do too, it's fun.
Yeah, it's a magic trick. So I think because I didn't attach myself to anything else, it was only going to happen, right? And how it looked is not up to me. I think that's really the result of who you meet along the way. From whether it's collaborators, managers, fans, friends, and spouses, all who are going to support you in your creativity or your path, that plays into it. Because, you know, if I hadn't met anybody, yeah, I might be the coffee shop guy living in his car, but I'd still be me and still be happy. But because I met some very powerful and influential people that helped me make my dream, project my dream even louder, it's put me where we are today. And maybe that's why people see it's so easy for you, is because you allow your spirit to remain free and allows you to travel all over the world pursuing all of your curiosities and passions.
Mm-hmm.
And that's why other people might look at you and think, oh, it comes so easy for you.
Yeah.
But you just, you're leaving those windows of opportunity open so that mm-hmm. when they show up, it's easy for us to say yes to them and accept them.
Right, right. Yeah. I love that. Who is someone, you kind of touched on this a little bit, but I'm curious now, who is someone or even a string of people that without them knowing what they were doing at the time, everything came together to greatly impact your life at a point? Does that make sense?
I mean, say that again one more time.
So for example, I am currently, I'm really passionate and intrigued on figuring out, I was adopted as a baby. I was mm-hmm. an orphan in Korea. Mm-hmm. And so I'm so entrenched in discovering the people that were around back then that led me to being adopted by my amazing family that I have today. So, for example, the doctor that found me, the social worker that gave a good report on me and said that I'd be a really good personality, be adopted. Like, so I've discovered all these really cool things, and I'm like, oh my God, I mean, what if the social worker said I was a little brat and I wouldn't stop crying? Like,
that's
would
right.
I still have been adopted today?
That's
so
right.
I'm just so touched by all the intricacies of mm-hmm. the people that had no idea what they were doing was going to get me to where I am right now.
Yes.
And so do you have any?
Gosh, I do have key people in my life mm-hmm. like that.
Yeah.
There are key people that made very important introductions for me because they saw me do something once
mm-hmm.
and said, wow, that's, you have a gift. I want you to meet somebody else that knows what to do with people like you or something like that. For example, and before I tell a story, I'll also say, I mean, it was also every single music teacher, babysitter, because our babysitter, she didn't let us sit down and watch TV. She said,
oh, I
read these
that.
Plays. I want you guys to put on this play today. Or we got a video camera now, so why don't you guys go make up a movie or shoot something? So
that's
from a very,
very
young age,
cool.
we were just creating. And I think that's why I just chose, if I can do this the rest of my life, I will. I want to uh-huh. be an adult, but still feel like a kid, just creating stuff. And so, babysitter was key.
That is really cool.
Parents were very supportive.
Yeah.
Hanover County Public Schools in Virginia, where I grew up, amazing arts programs with, you could take photography mm-hmm. or band or chorus, drama, communications, all these things I still use in my life.
Mm-hmm.
So great teachers there. But then there are these random key people in your adult life that have almost no affiliation with your trade. That one was this guy, Ron, BMX rider. I met him because my ex-girlfriend was dating him, and they were kind enough to let me crash with them in San Francisco the first time I ever came to California.
Mm-hmm.
And I just wanted to come out here for inspiration. I thought it was kind of very Kerouac-esque to move to the West and be inspired by the adventures. And this BMX rider and I got to be friends, and he knew my manager. And he said, bring your guitar. We're going to go to Vegas and have a party for the weekend. And you can jam out in the hotel room for people. I was like, sounds good. So went and had this great party and jammed out. And that night in that hotel, I met Bill, who's my manager, and several other people. Justin, who manages my farm today.
Oh.
Jerry, who is just a lifer, who currently manages my merch business, but he dabbles in all of it, from our farm to our mm-hmm. music. I mean, he's a lifer. He's such a giver. And that was more than 18 years ago.
Wow.
And I met them all in this hotel room.
That's amazing.
And they said, and all thanks to this BMX rider who was dating my ex-girlfriend. And they broke up shortly after.
Uh-huh.
And so had I not been in San Francisco at that window of opportunity,
yeah.
I wouldn't have met that rider who introduced me to my manager. Because he would have come and gone out of my ex's life. And similarly, meeting my manager, I know that artists and opportunities have come in and out of his life at different times. Mm-hmm. And he said no. So I also met him at this really great window when he was willing to take on a new project in a management field, which was also a new field for him.
Mm-hmm.
So we saw it as a significant meeting as well. Like, mm-hmm. wow, the timing is really right for both of us to try this. They, at that time, were based in San Diego and said, you should go check out San Diego. I'd never been here before. So from Vegas, I went to San Diego with a backpack. And crashed with Bill for a while and tried the coffee shops and just got a sense of what was going on. I was like, oh, this is a really cool community. Okay, well, nice to meet you. I'll go back to San Francisco and maybe we'll stay in touch. And he said, before you go, he offered me a house-sitting position because he was moving his whole business to Los Angeles. He said, why don't you just stay here in this house, go play the coffee shops, get better at what you do. And it gave me free rent, is what it gave me. It gave me my best possible place to start.
And he saw something in you.
Yep.
That maybe you hadn't seen yet.
He saw the potential, mm-hmm. but he knew I needed to develop skills mm-hmm. in performing live, and I needed to build up my song catalog. Because I only had about a dozen songs, and they were weird. But they sounded pretty. They sounded pretty, but they weren't really for the masses.
Okay.
And I didn't really know what that even meant. But so I holed up at Bill's house. He moved to LA, and Jerry and Justin and I got to become very good friends because I was this new kid in San Diego. And because I was a new kid, I didn't fear anything. I was making it, because remember, my dream was, I don't want to have a day job.
Right.
I just
you don't
want to
be
create.
In a cube farm or 9 to 5. Yeah.
Exactly. So mm-hmm. Those were very key, and it happened very quickly. And it also happened only about 3 weeks after I moved to California, mm-hmm. which was very bizarre, but I was open to any possibility that came mm-hmm. my way. I was in college in Virginia, and I kept hearing this voice, like, you need to go to California right now. And I'd hear the voice, I'd go, oh, no, I'll go in the summer. I'll finish the semester, and I'll spend my summers in California, but I'm going to really stay in school. And the voice just got louder and stronger. It's like, you need to not be here. You need to go to California.
That's
right
like the
now.
Voice that said, you're going to make my birthday amazing.
Exactly.
Just like this random.
So what is that voice? If it's not the voice that says, you're less than... It's this other voice that says, hey, there's a brilliant opportunity up ahead. It's dangling some carrot.
Uh-huh.
So I listened to that voice. I said, all right, I'm going to go. And at spring break, I packed everything up, moved to California. And 3 weeks later, I met people who would change my life forever, who believed in me.
That's so cool.
Yeah. And it was scary. I cried. I drove myself from Virginia to California all by myself, sobbing, so afraid, like I was giving everything up and just... Didn't afraid, also sobbing because I knew how romantic and beautiful it was, that I'm really doing it. I'm really on this highway pursuing this crazy dream.
What did your parents say?
I didn't tell them.
Oh.
I waited. I said, I'm taking a trip to California for spring break. And after, luckily, I made some connections very fast. And after I was out in California for about 6 weeks, I said, hey, I didn't go back to college. I'm staying out here.
Oh, so they thought you went back to college the entire time after spring break.
Yeah.
Okay, got it.
I just didn't check in.
Right.
You know, I didn't lie. I just didn't tell the whole truth.
Exactly.
And so I said, hey, I'm out here. I'm going to be staying out here. And my mom was a little disappointed. So she quickly came out to visit because she's like, what are you doing? Where are you living? Who are these people? And she saw a gig that I had set up. And she's like, oh. Okay, people are responding to this. Like, you got it. Go for it. So, and then, you know, this is why I said I couldn't have created this whole thing by myself. This mm-hmm. was really so many people coming in, collaborators and people that believed in my dream.
Mm-hmm.
And there was a period, too, when I'm doing the coffee shop run. I did about 3 years straight of coffee shop gigging. And some weeks early on in that, some months were pretty tight. Barely was making the bills. And it was the kindness of friends that would say, I'm going to take you to dinner, or I'm going to take you to the movies, you know, come out with me. That would give me a good quality of life, even though I didn't have a dime to spend.
Oh,
right?
I love that.
And that's really what I think nurtured me wanting to give back once I made it. That's what planted those seeds, because I know that no matter how hard my struggle was, my community gave me a good quality of life. And
right, you had so many people that believed in you.
Totally.
Yeah.
And so once I got the bills paid, and then eventually things grew exponentially, and I surpassed all of my wildest dreams and goals, that it made sense for me to, not only made sense, it just felt good to make sure people in my community, when they struggled, they were also eating, and they were also being pumped up, and that their art mattered. No matter what level they got to, their mm-hmm. art mattered, and you know, their quality of life should be a good one.
So then is that how you developed your foundation, or is that kind of the springboard?
Absolutely.
Okay.
Absolutely. I knew as things were starting to grow, I said, I want to make sure that somewhere in here is a charity arm. Mm-hmm. And I didn't know what it looked like. I didn't know the first thing about the language and the how it worked.
Mm-hmm.
I just knew that if I was going to be receiving spotlight and money, some of that light and money should be going to groups of people that are run by volunteers that are scraping by, mm-hmm. but they're doing amazing work.
Mm-hmm.
And so it just took, what I've learned is you don't donate to organizations or causes, you donate to people. And mm-hmm. so you meet people on your path that blow you away with mm-hmm. their Indiana Jones lifestyle. And you think, I want to help put gas in that guy's Jeep. You know, I want to make sure that his project is funded so that that work can continue. So I've, because of that, I've been able to dabble in a lot of different fields, I guess, whether it's human rights, environmental protection, assistance in recovery, music education, etc. And this past year, I've decided, okay, I've seen a lot. I want to really refocus my foundation now that I've had more time understanding where my money goes. I want it, right. how I want it to be more impactful. Rather than writing a lot of small checks, I want to create a new programs and partner with people that big checks can help make big things happen.
Mm-hmm. So, and that's your, what, like at this point in your recreation of that, mm-hmm. what does that look like? Or what are you seeing?
Right. Well, I've decided to cut back on this wide scope that I was going to assist in. For example, you know, environmental conservation and preservation is something that we stand for morally and ethically. We should be responsible for it. But I'm not going to let my foundation's earnings go down that path.
And this is the Jason Mraz Foundation,
This
right?
is Jason Mraz Foundation.
The title? Okay.
Exactly.
All right.
And we're basically shining a light through inclusive arts education mm-hmm. and the advancement of equality.
Mm-hmm.
And I chose to focus on those things. We still respect Mother Earth, but when I'm raising funds, I really want it to be for inclusive arts education and the advancement of equality, because quality of life and helping the next legacy, the next generations of creators thrive in the world is something mm-hmm. that I can personally relate to.
For sure.
And I look forward to building that program.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas the environment is such a huge project, and it's so challenging with climate deniers and people
yes.
that live in cities that have no connection to our parks and our beaches and our farms, that it was so overwhelming that it will be a part of my life
mm-hmm.
for sure.
But, obviously, I mean, look at your
exactly.
property. This is...
But it was taking a lot of energy away from everything else in the foundation.
Yeah.
So it was a hard... It was a hard decision, but
right.
I really did need to simplify my message and my program.
Mm-hmm.
And like I said, instead of writing a lot of little checks to a lot of things all over the world, really trying to bring it home.
Mm-hmm.
So our first program will hopefully launch in 2019 here in San Diego. And right now we're just seeing everything we can about the San Diego arts community in schools, after-school programs, in homes, clinics, etc. And hoping to discover where there's a gap. And in that gap, be able to build our program. And hopefully in 2018, really solidify our partnerships and staffing, mm-hmm. create their curriculum, and then in 2019, launch this baby and see how it goes.
Wow.
So it'll be a fun, probably like an arts camp.
Oh, okay. So what I wanted to ask you too, so then what does inclusive arts mean? I'm not clear on that term myself.
So what we want to do is uplift those who might be viewed as second class or be underserved, whether it's the special needs community, it could be immigrants and refugees,
okay.
it could be LGBT
mm-hmm.
youth, it could be homeless youth.
Yeah.
That's
amazing. I love that.
Put them all together
mm-hmm.
because there actually are a lot of arts programs for kids with special needs, but how many of those programs, little to none, are where those kids are actually integrated with typically abled kids. And they all get to work together on a very challenging curriculum. So the typically abled kids are learning compassion and empathy because they're working with these special needs kids
mm-hmm.
who are learning, you know, in some cases, just new physical movement and social skills that they didn't have access to because they were in
yeah.
the special needs class.
They're denied. Or
exactly.
It wasn't even an option.
Exactly.
Mm-hmm.
So everyone in the same pool.
Mm.
And melt hearts. And this idea actually came from a friend in Virginia who has been doing this project for the last 5 years,
mm-hmm.
which I've been a part of. It's called Live Art. And we do it every, I have to take a deep breath because it's such a beautiful story, and it can be a long story. Mm. I'll try to give you the short story. Live Art is everything I just described to you. It's an inclusive arts program. Mm-hmm. Theirs is 10 months. It runs in parallel with the school year, hosted by the School of Performing Arts in the Richmond community, of which I am an alum in Richmond, Virginia. And we felt there was a need for this, for a rigorous artistic training experience for anybody who's involved. And it culminates in this brilliant concert every June where we bring in veteran artists to perform alongside our young people. And so what's likely going to happen is some replication of that here in San Diego. But it may not be for 10 months. It could be. If we find the right partners or a school that can help us pull it off, it could be very much that. But I think we can do it in a shorter amount of time as well. Which
So then going back to, you're saying art camp, it's going to be mm-hmm. like a camp for the children to enlist in, or?
Exactly. Okay, so we want to provide artistic training for personal mm-hmm. expression and development. And you're there. And the way we've done it in the past is, the way it's challenging for all is you mix up the mediums. So mm-hmm. you might paint with your feet, or you might paint blindfolded.
Oh.
Or you dance with tools that paint images on computer screens. You know, like, you mix it up, you learn rhythm, you learn sign language, and I mean, anybody that's learning an instrument, right there, there's a challenge. And you learn, you create, and it's also based on the strengths and of the individual creators that come mm-hmm. to the camp. So here we are going into the summer of 2017. This project could look very different in 2 years, but at the moment, that's what it's looking like. It's going to be a very exciting, diverse, crazy arts camp that hopefully you just make new friends at. You feel like you've learned some new tools when you go in to create a song or create a play or create a dance.
I love it.
Yeah.
Those kids are going to be so excited.
Yeah, it's going to be a blast.
For what's, they don't know it's coming, but.
Exactly. I love that too. Like, all of this work that takes years and years yeah. of preparation for, just to stoke some kids out.
Yeah.
That's it.
That's amazing.
Yeah, it's going to be fun.
I love it. And then you also mentioned, we were talking earlier, that you're currently building a small farm brand from your backyard. What do you mean by that?
Okay. So this I never thought I would do. But mm-hmm. I moved out here because I wanted to live out in the country. This is back in 2004,
mm-hmm.
based on having visited Bob Marley's house in Kingston, Jamaica. It's now a museum, and you can
tour it. That's incredible.
It's cool. This place is very cool. It's a big compound, but it sits right in I don't want to say the heart of Kingston. I've only visited there once, but it's definitely outside of the compound is the city. There's mm-hmm. a lot going on, but in the compound, it's very peaceful. And all kinds of people there playing games and cooking cornmeal porridge in the yard. Things that Bob Marley sang about are still happening on that property. And he had a studio in the back and a little garden. And it was a model. It was the first time I'd seen a real practical model for living. So I had just had some success with my first album. And I didn't want to live in an apartment in Los Angeles where I was living at that time. Decided I was going to come back to San Diego mm-hmm. and find some countryside/farm space, and found the house. It was a little outside of my comfort zone because I had been living in apartments,
yeah,
you know, or sleeping at Java Joe's. And now suddenly I'm a homeowner. Like, I thought I was gonna have a fixer-upper house, but I have, you know, a classic, you know, hacienda, Southern California hacienda. We built the studio in the backyard. My whole band moved in, so it felt practical. You know, there's a lot of us here. Crew guys coming. We turned the coming and going. We turned the garage and living room into studio spaces while this was being built. And it became a place where between tours I could come and refill my well, be as weird as I want, as loud as I want, take more risk creatively, not have to pay other studios for their time.
Yeah.
But be here and learn the art of recording. And over time, I started to take notice of the trees that were here, which are all avocado trees planted in the early 1970s. And as a landowner, you have to make decisions about how these trees are going to perform. So I was kind of forced into it by mm-hmm. choosing to live in an agricultural area.
Mm-hmm.
So around 2009, 2010, I had fallen in love with Cafe Gratitude by now, and I really wanted to eat my own zip code. I lived in an agricultural area. Surely people around here must be growing food I could eat. Why should I have to Why should I have to import and do all that? You know, there was a big movement going around, farm to table and eat local and eat organic. Uh-huh. I said, I need to take more action here in this land. I can't just live here and not participate. So started with a small garden just to learn how it works. Started meeting neighbors and who've become collaborators and farming mentors and helped me manage the groves, convert them to organic, diversify and understand social impacts, environmental impacts, and then economic impacts. Because one thing I learned very quickly going down the organic path was I was losing money every year because it's very expensive to convert. And because everything you have to do is by hand. You can't just walk around once a year and spray something. You're out there constantly. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Most of it's managing irrigation control and pulling weeds or managing how your weeds grow because weeds are actually a good thing. So all of that just takes time and people and materials. And so thousands of dollars were going every year. And so I realized I needed to bring my name recognition into my farming life. Mm-hmm. But it's also been helpful because the stuff I've learned in farming is I can be applied to the music business as well, like or any business, in that the obvious things, like you plant a tree, it takes patience, it takes time, it takes feeding it, it takes pruning it. But also the story you tell around it and the experience you let your customers have with it. And so that's what we're in the process of doing is, and we're doing this only to help the farm sustain itself. You know, I shouldn't have to, it's only being sustained right now by my credit card. But what we would like to have, and it's launching very soon, it already exists, but it's Mraz Family Farms. You can go online and check us out. We have a little blog, and you can order our avocados and wood products that come from our trees. And we're basically trying to...
MrazFamilyFarms.com?
That's it.
Okay.
And have a direct-to-consumer experience. But at the same time, if you come in, you get to hopefully be educated a bit on the brilliance of nature and how magical Mother Earth is. Nowadays, I mean, especially in this area, every tree you see isn't native. Man planted these here, and that's the same with all of our communities and our cities. Most of the trees and the land, the park landscapes are put there by people, by designers, and it's still a medium we can work with, and we can reintroduce native plants. But Mother Earth itself is so beautiful, and I don't want her to be lost on our, just for some short-term gains. And so that's what we hope that Mraz Family Farms will be able to teach, as well as provide food and fun and coffee.
That's amazing.
We grow coffee.
You grow coffee?
We grow coffee, which is very exciting for California as it's a new crop. So it's an industry that doesn't really exist yet, but it's just starting.
Oh, that's amazing.
Yeah.
So it'll be called Mraz Family Coffee?
Not sure. The storefront is Mraz Family Farms.
I'll have to judge it for you since I'm a coffee snob.
We do have 11 different varieties, so each variety has its own name already. But not sure what the final roast name will be called or anything like that.
I cannot wait. When is that coming out?
Probably by 2020.
Okay.
It'll be in that decade at least that things really start to get ramped up.
Okay. Gosh, that seems so far away, doesn't it?
It does, but it doesn't.
It is, but it isn't.
We have a lot to do before then to prepare for all of that coffee that's coming because we
that's
have
amazing.
A lot of coffee trees growing right now. And by 2019, 2020, we're going to be over our head in beans.
So wait, then how many acres are we sitting on right now?
We're sitting on 11.
Okay.
And over,
Okay. Wow, that's amazing. I love it.
Mm-hmm.
I'll have to check out your website.
Please.
This is a question inspired by my friend Dave. And your big hit, I'm Yours, started an incredible movement. Everyone caught on to that. It's such a catchy tune. It was such a huge song for that moment. And you captured people and you inspired them from just that song. So I wanted to know, how were you inspired yourself through that moment? Because that was a big moment for you. That was like when people really knew who you were, right? Am I correct in saying that?
That was probably the peak of my popularity. That introduced me to a world audience for sure.
Yeah, you became worldwide for sure. So what was that like, and how were you inspired yourself during that time?
Well, The song itself came very quickly. It came here. It was...
Right here, where we're sitting?
Not in this, because this wasn't built yet. But I was in my house.
Oh, that's right. Okay.
And the fall of 2004. And the song itself was not written for someone. I didn't have a girlfriend at the time. It was about surrendering, singing into the great unknown and saying, make me an instrument. I'm yours. I won't hesitate anymore. You know, our time is short. This is our fate. I'm yours. And just singing on some happy, happy hippie chords. You know, it wasn't long after my visit to Bob Marley's house. And wrote it on an electric guitar even. Most people associate it with the ukulele. But it was just a happy little song that just came out very, very quickly. About 45 minutes, wrote the whole thing down. I thought, well, that's cute. Sounds like a nursery rhyme or something. Maybe I'll put it on a kid's album. And I set it aside. And I played it for the band and producer and label during my second album, Mystery to Z. But it just wasn't, I guess it wasn't realized, fully realized, and we dismissed it and we didn't put it on the record. But in 2005, I started to add it to my live show, started playing it, and it just felt really, just felt great. It had a good energy to it. And the more
really
I played
catchy.
It, the more I played it live, the more the melody really took off and some of its attitude appeared, I guess. And eventually found the groove by, say, 2007. And at that time, it had existed on my MySpace page as an acoustic
MySpace,
freebie.
That's funny.
Yeah, exactly.
Just so long ago.
And I could put up to 5 songs on there that were streaming for anybody. And that was on there. And that was, I noticed, was just racking up the hits. And as I toured to strange places in the world, people already knew the song. I said, wow, this song has a life of its own. I better put it on my next record. So I recorded it, put it on my next record, and by the time I recorded it then, I did have a girlfriend. So the song has a little more swagger in the recording, like, scooch on over closer, dear. That's me trying to entertain the girl I was dating at the time. And even since then, some of the lyrics have changed. Like, I no longer say it's our God-forsaken right to be loved. That was a phrase that I remember hearing growing up. Like... God forsaken this, God forsaken that.
Yeah.
But I honestly, because the song was written so fast, I didn't take a moment to look up what that meant. And that would mean, in the absence of God, it's our right to be loved. And that, it's almost shocking because I feel differently. So now I actually sing, it's our God intended right to be loved. And
I love that.
I was almost blind
to it. I love that you looked that up, like,
yeah,
later on.
Yeah.
But
I was turning a phrase... Originally, I was just turning a phrase that I had heard as a kid. God forsaken this, God forsaken that. But didn't realize it was almost like a curse. Like almost like a curse word to say that. Some people I've talked to who like the song, they like that aspect of it because it brings a little hint of darkness into the song. But I don't ever sing forsaken anymore. I always sing intended. And I have probably since 2009. Because I think God is ever present.
Yeah.
I don't think there isn't.
I
don't think there's ever an absence of God, even if we in our brains think differently about what God is. But I don't think that energy ever goes away. As long as we're breathing in and out, we are it deep inside of it. And I think so. So anyway, we're talking about the song.
No, I love that.
So that's how the song kind of came about. And but it was a slow build, you know, from 2004 to 2008, slow build, playing it live. And then 2008, when it came out, I spent all of 8 and 9 touring. It was a 22-month tour that started in small clubs and moved to bigger theaters that moved to bigger things and eventually ended up in amphitheaters all over the place. And so it didn't happen overnight. And by the time also that I'm Yours really blew up, it had been 10 years since I'd... been 10 years since I dropped out of college and moved to California and started that coffee shop dream.
Yeah.
You know?
Oh,
so
wow.
It took 10 years of writing and trying and doing and just being a yes to all these possibilities before, you know, this one song broke through. And what I think that song broke through too was because it was just the right message at the right time. Whatever else was on the radio, this was like a counter to it. And we still see that today with music. There's the stuff that breaks through is the stuff that's a counter to it. Something else that we're tired of.
Got
and
it.
Music is constantly refreshing itself. And the singer-songwriter is lucky in that he appears in every decade throughout uh-huh. history. Music styles always change, but
right.
singer-songwriters always manage to be needed because of their connectivity with the listener, I guess.
I love that you pointed out the 10 years mm-hmm. because I'm sure that many people thought, oh, you're an overnight success, or it just happened like that, but it
right.
didn't happen just like that.
Exactly. It did not, because yeah. I had little successes with every project mm-hmm. I made that got me to the next level. My coffee shop recordings got me my record deal. My first album got me a little play on the radio with The Remedy, and that got me touring the nation.
Mm-hmm.
And then my second album sustained me and got me learning more, helped me build a studio. And my third album had I'm Yours on it, which mm-hmm. took me around the world. And then my fourth album was so tough to make because I just had this huge worldwide success. But luckily, it came with I Won't Give Up and allowed me to sustain.
Yeah, I love it. Mm-hmm.
So, but albums aren't easy just because I've made them now. They're still very, very challenging to mm-hmm. put content on it that is urgent, content that matters, content that's meaningful, content that feels good when you sing it, when you play it back.
I would think there'd be a lot of pressure there. No.
Yeah. And most of the pressure is what I put on myself.
Right.
But okay. it's also pressure that comes from, you know, I turn it in and then a committee has to review it, whether or not they're mm-hmm. going to promote it and put it out through their channels all over the world. And because I've had worldwide success in the past, there's almost a level of expectation because we can play at that level now. And if we're going to play at that level,
mm-hmm.
the stuff we put out there has to be sharp, mm-hmm. has to be competitive, it has to be original, you know, it has to be something that people want.
That's so interesting. I never realized there's a committee that has to...
It's a small committee.
Yeah, but still.
Yeah, I mean, they have jobs too mm-hmm. at the label to schedule all the different releases that are coming out
mm-hmm.
and compete with other record labels and compete with whatever else is on the radio station. And it's a very small window
mm-hmm.
or a small space where music gets played. I mean, because there's so much music being created nowadays. I love Spotify. Because I can just constantly live in discovery.
Mm-hmm.
There's so much music that I have access to nowadays. So how, as a creator, do I put myself in that pool and stand out?
Right.
Right? So it's tough. Very, very tough.
It's just keeping your eye on the ball and then, you know, what am I trying to say? It's just doing you.
Yep.
Because clearly you've done you in the past and that's
exactly.
worked out really well for you.
Exactly. Exactly. That's the goal. Do me. We actually have a song called You Do You, I'll Do Me. Together we'll make harmony. It's cute too.
That's interesting because I thought this whole time, or I made the assumption that I'm Yours is a love song, but that's interesting hearing the story that it started out like, I love how you just surrendered to life
Absolutely.
And surrendered to creativity. And,
yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it's a song of just surrender.
Mm-hmm.
But it became a love song. Because,
be open.
Yeah, exactly.
That's amazing. So you are currently in the midst of a tour, and you're also getting ramped up for that. What are the things that you need? Like, how do you sustain yourself? What do you need? What's your what are your must-haves for the day? Like, do you have to have coffee? Do you have to have a certain amount of sleep? What time do you go to bed? Like, how does that look like for you? What are your days like
on tour, or mm-hmm. just in general? Well,
whatever one you want to share.
Yeah, they're actually the same mm-hmm. now because there's really no off cycle, and I've learned to adapt. I used to have tour periods where I'd be gone for months and months and months at a time,
mm-hmm.
but now I can flow in and out of here and tour. And I do travel with a yoga mat because that's my gym that fits in my suitcase. Everything mm-hmm. I need, that and gravity is all you really need for me to feel great. And I bring a little container of greens, like Vitamineral Green, which I love. And I might bring a little bit of protein powder from Garden of Life. And I do that because those are, no matter where I am, I know I can mix that with some water
mm-hmm.
and get a little bit of that nutrition that I'm, just in case I don't get it, wherever I go today, when I'm out in the world, if I'm at airports all day or mm-hmm. whatever. And now the landscape has changed a lot in the last 10 years where you can actually have healthier food is more accessible,
mm-hmm.
which I love.
For sure.
So I definitely want to help keep that moving in that direction. But there was a period of time where I toured with a whole kitchen case, a big penguin, big pelican case
oh.
with a blender in it and all these different ingredients to either do soups or smoothies or salads and anything you need. You could just do it. But I've learned now I can just get it in two little containers, mm-hmm. you know. But I also know that health food is more mm-hmm. readily available. But that's it. I do yoga on show days, guaranteed. Mm-hmm. Any day that I'm going to show up and have some type of appearance, that's a must for me. Because like I said, it just helps me get in tune. I don't want to bring my less than to the experience. I want to bring my greatest to the experience. And making sure that I'm nourished, that I'm hydrated, and that I have good food in me. And mm-hmm.
What do you eat?
That's it.
What's one of your favorite meals?
When I'm touring, it's usually Indian or Thai food.
Mm.
I feel like you can get really good vegetarian, spicy food through those channels, and I just love those flavors.
For sure.
When I'm home, it's such a variety because my wife is a chef, and plant-based is her forte. So she can make the most scrumptious. Every dinner is
that's pretty cool.
Every dinner is Thanksgiving. Oh, the different salads she makes. Like right now, it's forbidden rice with sweet potatoes and beets from our garden. Or it's
that sounds incredible.
She's very much into cooked greens. Like we were in the raw versus cooked debate for a while, and now we're into cooked greens, cooking greens down from our garden for about an hour. So you really just destroy the cell wall, transform its color and flavor, and eat it and drink all the broth. And those things, I try to look for those when I travel. There's some I eat a lot at grocery stores, natural markets, mm-hmm. that might have a little salad bar or soup. I'm very picky about restaurants, and I mean, I'm grateful when I get to go, but I'd rather get closer to the source,
mm-hmm.
you know,
for sure.
Unless a restaurant comes recommended to me. But I eat healthy.
Yeah.
It's a must.
Yeah. Definitely. So how, speaking of your wife, mm-hmm. how did you propose to her? What's the story? Is there a good story behind that?
Yeah, I think so.
And by the way, that would be stressful, having to come up with how to propose, I would think.
Yeah. I had tried it once before with a different person, and it was stressful. And so I knew that if I ever did it again, I didn't get married the first time. It was just an engagement. But
mm-hmm.
I thought if I ever do it again, I want it to just be simple
mm-hmm.
and real and honest. Not a gimmick, but me showing up for what you're asking is this huge game, life-changing commitment to transformation and growth. Because why else would you get married?
Right, for sure.
I was probably a cynic and thought, you know, marriage is really just for two people to combine their resources so they can survive. Maybe that's where marriage came from. But now I really get that a marriage is this brilliant partnership that has so many different arms to hug so many different things at once. And that now her wisdom becomes my wisdom. Like we have a bigger brain because everything she is matched with everything I am. We become us, which I didn't know. I didn't know that was going to happen. And I love that. So things that she does in the kitchen are now, I'm learning how to do that. And communication, she's learning that from me as an example. And I love that about her. I probably said that already. I love it. I just love it. I love it. I proposed to her on our back deck here at home because she said, I don't want anything fancy. She didn't even know I was going to propose. She never asked. She never thought that we would get married. That wasn't...
Oh, so you guys had never talked about it prior to you?
No, but I had mentioned it.
Uh-huh.
Through our dating, we took baby steps. It was like, I think I would like to live with you. I would like the experience of being closer with you. Okay, so we eventually lived together for a while. And okay, yeah, I think we would like to keep playing this. And I personally felt I wanted to marry her because I wanted to give her the protections, like, of what a spouse can receive. You know, I wanted her to have health insurance, you know, that I have. And as we grow older, I wanted her to just have ownership of the things that we're now creating together as a duo. So we did that. And I've only been surprised ever since at how much we've continued to grow because we are a duo. And I proposed on our back deck. She said she doesn't want for anything. You can't get her to go shopping or indulge in any material stuff. She's just
That's
not
cool.
into it. The only thing material she likes might be like a nice La Crusette pot that she can cook in, you know, very efficiently.
Yeah.
But it's for the greater good of our community. And so she says, I don't want anything. All I like is a good cup of coffee, dental floss, and my stud. Which she is just me. She calls me a stud.
That's awesome.
So we had a nice dinner at home. It was the week that my Yes album was coming out in the world. And things were quiet, because surprisingly quiet, because we had done a lot of promotion. And then you just kind of sit and wait and see what the album does. So we're sitting at home, and it's pretty quiet. Make her a cup of coffee, which is unusual for after dinner, because we don't usually drink coffee in the afternoon. But I wanted her to have a nice cup of coffee. And then I brought her some dental floss from Asia. Mm-hmm. Which she loves this special dental floss I bring her from Asia, because it's this big cylindrical can and it's got tons of dental floss in it. It's different than what we can find over here. And so I made her this replica of the floss, but I changed the label to have the language was specific to us and the date of today and what this product can accomplish. And so when she opened it up, there was a ring inside. So she got coffee, dental floss, and her stud. And
that's awesome.
And I got down on my knee, and we were crying. And something I had learned from Matthew and Tercy's Englehart, the founders of Cafe Gratitude.
Okay.
They say, when you ask someone to marry you, what you're really asking them is, will you help me heal my wounds? And so I got down on my knee, and I asked her if she'd help me heal my wounds. I'm starting to tear up a little bit. And I've learned that, you know, through any relationship, the people you hang out with the most are going to trigger you the most. They are going to reveal where we are not our greatest and where we get angry and throw our tantrums. Mm-hmm. And those are old wounds that are being opened up. And then with someone that's your partner, if someone can sit and hold space for that and help you work that out and heal that up, then it'll never come back. Or it comes back less and less through life. And you get to heal that part of yourself and move on and move forward. That's very nice. So that's what our engagement was about.
Oh my gosh.
And we're doing the work.
That is
and
we're having so beautiful.
A blast. Yeah.
I love that story. It's so simple and it's so unique at the same time.
Thanks.
I love that. You had all three things she asked for. I need to know that dental floss because I'm a dental floss freak.
Oh.
So
okay.
Yeah, I need to get that from before I go.
I don't know that the floss itself was as special as more the quantity that was provided in this little can.
Oh,
and it's a cute little can. It's like, you know, it's a little silver can. But it just has endless, like, I don't know, 200 yards of dental floss.
Only in Asia.
Exactly.
You can get it only in Asia?
Yeah, okay. I guess. I've never seen it anywhere else.
I love that. So I thought it'd be fun to... Well, actually, this is what I am also curious about is, can you share a time where you wanted something really badly, you didn't get it, and then looking back, you're so incredibly grateful that it didn't turn out, and why?
Where I wanted something badly, it didn't work out, and then I was like, oh, I'm glad that didn't happen.
Because it propelled you into something big that you didn't see.
Gosh. I don't know. It's probably everything.
Isn't that right, though, in a way?
I mean...
Because so many things you don't get, it's always for a really good reason.
Yeah. I mean, it would probably be... I mean, a number of things through my past, but it could be, like, college, for example. I didn't get into every college I applied to. And then I got into a musical and performing arts academy, which was its own thing. Which was nice and did that, but I dropped out of that to pursue original music. But had I got accepted into college and gone with all of my friends, I may have just ended up with a completely different career path, whether it's music educator or ended up singing on a cruise ship or, you know, a musical theater guy. Who knows? But I remember for a little period, I really wanted college to happen. But it never happened. And then through the years, I had different audition opportunities that came and went. And, you know, I think had any of them been accepted, I would have either veered off my path and done that for a while. It could have been great, or it could have just been more embarrassing stuff that ends up on the internet. But I don't know. That's a tough one because I really try not to dwell on the past and what could have been or what almost was. You know, I've had relationships that... I wanted so bad, and I'm so glad they didn't work out. And even then, in hindsight, I wish I had ended them even sooner than I did.
Yeah.
So I could have been even freer.
For sure.
From whatever those stories were.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
Oh, go ahead.
I was saying, I can only be grateful for my past, for everything I see and can't see about it.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah. Do you have a blooper moment you can share? A blooper moment. Oh, and I've been dying to ask you about your stand-up comedy.
Great.
Speaking of blooper, can we talk about that?
I think they go hand in hand because where I'm starting with my comedy is it gives me a chance to just share my bloopers.
Mm-hmm.
Because if you try to hide your bloopers, then I think they'll only, you'll fear them. You know, like, oh, I don't want anyone to know that, what's a blooper?
Yeah, like, you'll be horrified. Then you have to constantly shield yourself because you're horrified someone's going to find out about something that happened that you were really embarrassed over.
Okay, so, like, one of the things I talk about when I do stand-up is I talk about how I was a cheerleader in high school.
You were a cheerleader?
Briefly.
Wait, what?
Exactly.
You were a cheerleader in high school?
Briefly. Very briefly. And
I'm not making fun of you.
And I tried to hide that for when my album first came out and people knew about it. I was like, don't talk about that. Like, that's not who I want to be portrayed as. But now it's best to talk about it because it's so funny, you know? And it's part of where I was for a minute. Yeah, it's great.
So wait.
Ready?
You were you were a van cheerleader. How did you... Yeah. What, like, how did that happen?
Okay, so I was in show choir. I was in the singing and dancing with all the kids. And most of the girls in show choir were also the cheerleaders. And there were some guys in cheering who had graduated. And they said, you guys should come and take their place. Me and my friends in show choir.
Uh-huh.
And I'm not a very big guy, and I was definitely not a big guy in high school. I was a little scrawny kid who did singing and dancing. But I said, okay, let's do it. And plus, I also liked to push the buttons of my schoolmates. Like, I like to do something a little different that, I don't know why, just was different. Whether it's wear a goofy outfit or, you know, for some reason in high school, it wasn't cool to put your backpack on both shoulders. You could only have it on one shoulder.
Why? I remember that.
Terrible.
It's hard on your neck and your shoulder.
And a new kid came to school and he wore it on both shoulders and got made fun of. And I said, no way, dude, I'm going to wear mine on both shoulders because, heck, it's easier. It's more comfortable. But I also liked that it was different. And so, to me, cheerleading was as different as you could get. And so I said, yeah, let's do it. I was a junior, going to be a senior in high school. So my senior year, I was prepping to be a cheerleader for the football games. And in order to do this, I had to go to UCA cheerleading camp. And it was a blast because it was me and 500 girls and my one other guy. And we were just so appreciated. Me and this other guy, we got the spirit stick every day and everyone wanted us to be on their team. And I was singing happy birthday for someone every day because there was enough people there that it was always somebody's birthday. And it was great. We went back to school right before the school year and my friends and I were learning to just participate in the back with the gals and do some throws and some catches and megaphone.
I love how you're doing the motions right now too.
Yeah, exactly. And this was actually a really good thing. This kind of ties into the last question you asked about, aren't you glad something didn't work out? And right before the first game, the new cheerleading coach, she just wasn't really feeling us guys in the group. She's like, I don't know that you guys really want to be here. I don't know if you're taking it seriously. I don't know if you have enough experience to do this. She goes, I don't think you should do it. And so we said, all right, we won't do it. And I'm glad that happened because we never officially had to stand out there on a Friday night and cheer.
Oh, so you never
on the game. So all we did was camp, and probably 2 weeks of getting ready before the football season, before we were asked to leave. And I'm glad because who knows how terrible that would have been once school had started. But
Did anyone ever videotape you in camp?
Oh, yeah, I'm sure of it. Luckily, it hasn't surfaced yet, but it will. And I'm okay with that.
I want to see that.
So I talk about camp experiences and growing up in Virginia. And I talk about stuff that's happened to me through my music career that could be classified as a blooper. And it's good to air that out rather than be ashamed of it. Because there were some years where like, oh, I wish I hadn't done that. And now that's on YouTube forever. But comedy is a great way to just... Comedy is what? Tragedy plus time equals comedy.
Uh-huh.
So...
Oh, I never thought of it that way.
So once enough time
tragedy
has passed...
Plus, yeah.
We get there and... yeah. I grew my hair out years ago. This is sort of a blooper, but I talk about this when I'm doing comedy too. I grew my hair out. It took me years, good 2 years to.
What do you mean by grew it out?
Grew it out. How? Well, I've always had short hair. Yeah, I grew it out. Like it was down to kind of my nipples, I guess.
Okay.
Like past shoulder length. And I was digging it. I was like, yeah, I did it. I finally just don't care what anybody said because I got a lot of comments that I should cut it. No, I'm rebelling. Plus, I need to know. I just need to do this. And I'm going to be that guy with long hair. And maybe after that, I'll turn it into dreads. And I'm at a public event, and a woman comes up to me. She says, are you Kenny G? And I said, no, ma'am. She said, yes, you are.
Oh, my God. That's amazing. That's amazing.
So that night, I got mistaken for Kenny G twice. Two different people.
No way.
And... I go to Australia, similar time, I go to Australia, and the newspaper says, Jason Mraz here to play a concert sporting his new Kenny G locks. I said, no, I didn't grow my hair for this. This isn't, but I didn't know my hair was going to be that curly, because I'd never grown it out before. But
right.
Once it got long, it was curling up. Plus, I didn't know how to manage long hair. I would take a shower in the morning, and then I would go to meetings and interviews at 11 a.m. with tight, wet, curly hair, not realizing that if girls want to do that, they have to get up at 5 a.m. to wash their hair and go through this drying process. And so all this added hair maintenance came. I ended up cutting it all off because it wasn't what I thought. So that was kind of a big blooper for me. But that's the kind of stuff I talk about when I do the comedy.
So when you say when I do the comedy, start, like, how did... What do you mean when you do the comedy? Are you doing shows right now? Or are you...
I'm starting to keep those possibilities open.
Okay.
During my coffee shop era in the early 2000s, my roommate Billy Gailwood, formerly known as Bush Walla, he used to host open mics and comedy nights in Los Angeles. And it was packed full of comics that would be testing out their material before they go and do The Tonight Show. So we were in the presence of these brilliant storytellers. And I loved comedy for its just pure art form of telling you a story and making you laugh, which is surprise conscious breathing.
Mm-hmm.
And I love that. You're just thrust into being alive through laughter.
Mm-hmm.
And I was the guy at the open mic who played guitar. So he said, I want to try 1 week to not play my guitar and just talk and see if my banter can sustain me. And it was working. And I started to put together stories that made people laugh. And so... through all my years of music, I've tried to make my banter light because music can sometimes be heavy or emotional, and I like to clear the palate with humor. And I've recently gotten in touch with that comedy scene that goes through the open mic circuits to stay fresh and test out their material. I've recently gotten realigned with them, and it's inspired me to try my banter again without music. And it largely started because I went to a comedy club in San Diego to see some friends, and as we were leaving, the owner said... hey, Billy, you're up next. There's no opener for the late show. And I just under my breath said, I'll open the late show. And the owner said, you got a hot 7? Which is like, you got 7 minutes? I said, yeah, I got a hot 7. And my stomach dropped. I immediately had to like crap my pants because I was so freaking nervous because I didn't have a hot 7. I didn't have anything prepared. I went to the bathroom to prepare myself, splash water on my face. Because the comedy club had 125 people in it ready to see a night of comedy. And I'm going to go up there. And I flash back to the stuff that I had done in the open mics 10 years ago. It's like, oh yeah, talk about cheerleading. Talk about and be real. Talk about where you are right now. You know, let them know that you felt like you were going to crap your pants. Like, just show up and be yourself, and it'll work. And it was great. It was the scariest but most liberating 7 minutes. And since then, I've just tried to stay more prepared so that when those opportunities come up, I can do it.
Oh, that's awesome.
I love comedy, and I would love for that. You know, earlier I said I've learned a lot about farming that can be applied to my music business.
Right.
In order for farms to sustain, there needs to be diversity. There needs to be a diversity in the things you're growing and for the different seasons you're growing it. And I find that while the music landscape has gotten diluted with more and more music creators, it's important for me to diversify not only the kind of music that I create, but just the kind of content that I create.
Mm-hmm.
So comedy is a kind of content that can be recorded and put out there. I can also do shows, whether it's video, comedy videos.
Mm-hmm.
So thanks to learning how to manage a farm, I'm learning how to manage my own music career through diversified creativity.
I love it.
And comedy is, everyone loves comedy.
You have some good stories.
And I have good stories. That I can't just sit on them anymore.
Yeah. When are you telling your other stories?
What do I tell
like,
them?
Like, when are you telling your other stories? I mean, do you have anything? I'm still like, do you have anything scheduled? Or is this like you're just seeing what comes your way? Are you like scouting out? Are you going to be on some show we can come to?
Baby steps. Because mm-hmm. I have friends in the comedy world, I can, mm-hmm. I've got a lot of opportunities where I can just show up and mm-hmm. they'll let me do 7 minutes.
Oh, nice.
And because I'm a touring artist and right now I play solo, I get to tell these stories all night long. So I try to weave a narrative through my show that can combine these song groups to take you through these different filters of love, whether it's love of the world around you, love of oneself, love of your mm-hmm. family, your community, where you come from.
Mm-hmm.
And then through all of that, which can be heady and emotional, try to tell silly stories that make people laugh. And mm-hmm. so I'm able to use my comedy in my music show.
Okay,
as
got
well.
It. Got it. So right now you're doing comedy with your touring.
Yep.
Just to entertain your audience, but
exactly.
not like just a specific stand-up.
Not yet.
Okay.
But I think there will be a time when I actually, mm-hmm. I'm going to brand a tour that allows me to do my sillier songs
mm-hmm.
and partner up with comics.
Mm.
So when people buy
that'd be fun.
Yeah, when they buy a ticket, they know they're not just going to hear, they're not coming to hear my typical love song show. This is specifically a night of comedy with comics and me doing my comedy too, but I'll play you some of the silly songs that have never made it on records, but are geared to make you laugh, hopefully.
Yeah. Oh, I love it.
Yeah. So in time.
Yeah, for sure. That's awesome. Thanks for sharing all that.
Mm-hmm.
So I thought it would be fun just to do a couple really fast questions, mm-hmm. such as chocolate or vanilla.
Chocolate.
Why? Really? Oh, I'm vanilla.
Great.
Does your taste buds say so, huh? Pizza or burritos?
Burritos.
Mm, 100%. I agree
mm-hmm.
with that. Early bird or night owl?
Night owl.
What time do you wake up in the morning?
I love an early bird. I'm about an 8:30 guy.
Oh, that's late.
Yeah. My wife is up before me, but I'm up by 8:30 so I can make her coffee.
Aww.
And then I can do my routine
yeah.
followed by my coffee / smoothie. And then hopefully by 10, 11, I'm in the studio in the mornings because I also have to do usually a lap or a check-in of farm business.
Okay.
Maybe a glance. The email thing can suck
yeah,
you in.
Yeah, for sure. For
so
sure.
So I don't always glance at those. I kind of have to set an intention like, okay, mm-hmm. tomorrow's an email day.
Yeah. and totally.
Studio, like I'll tend to meet a collaborator in here about 11 and we'll work till dinner time. And then after dinner, I'll come back and do my own tinkering until the wee hours of the morning.
Wow. So, okay. Know. Okay. Got it.
Yeah.
That's very cool. 8:30 is when I can sleep till 8:30, I'm so excited. It's like, I feel so good for the rest of the day. You get like those good power hours and...
Mm-hmm.
Okay, OCD or messy?
Probably OCD.
OCD?
Yeah. Because when something's messy, I don't like it.
Mm-hmm.
I gotta clean it up.
Yeah, for sure.
Mm-hmm.
All right. I mean, that's all I have. I want to keep talking to you, though. You have some really great stories
Thanks.
To hear from.
Thank you.
Do you have anything else you'd like to share that, or can you tell us how we can find you? Tell us about your upcoming tour, where people
sure.
can get tickets, all
well,
that kind of stuff.
My tour is, it's kind of random right now. I do a few dates a month. And then my next, so I have a couple this week in Montreal. A few things. This is May. Yeah.
This is May. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So this week I'm in French Canada. The first week of June, I'm back in Virginia doing some stuff with live art program we talked about earlier.
Very cool.
I'll be touring the Southwest in mid June. Which includes a stop at the Hollywood Bowl. So I'll be in Tucson, Albuquerque, Telluride, Bluegrass Festival, Salt Lake City, Hollywood Bowl, and then Ironstone Winery, which is in Northern California. That's through June. My whole family's coming out because it's my 40th birthday.
And June 23rd? Yeah, okay.
So the birthday party will be at the Hollywood Bowl
That's amazing.
It's going to
be
amazing.
It's going to be so fun.
I'm
so bummed I can't make that.
Big super band. Yeah, but you're going to be off doing some brilliant things.
Yeah, I'll be in Africa, so.
It's okay. Congratulations on that.
Thanks.
So my family out we'll have probably a good 2 or 3 weeks of summer vacation together, because I really want to put this album I'm working on to bed.
I'll
probably start touring again probably August, September. But,
okay. You
know, you can find those things out on my Facebook and everywhere that there's socials. I have a great social media manager who keeps me present. And we have some fun videos coming out over the next 6 weeks that you can watch that just share a little bit more of my comedy side that tie in a little bit to my music career as well, which is a new adventure. The farm store's there. I mean, just...
What's the theme of your album that you're trying to put to bed?
Masterpiece.
And when is that going to come out?
Masterpiece. Right there.
Oh, there it is.
So
very cool. I like how it's P-E-A-C-E, by the
exactly.
way, everyone.
Exactly. So what are we here to accomplish in life? Master war or masterpiece? And it seems like... I don't know, maybe it seems like in the divided states of America, we're 50-50 on that issue.
Mm-hmm.
You know, some people want to continue to build walls and and start wars and not help neighbor humans, even though we're all connected in this incredible system, Earth. And I believe that there are truly an equal amount of people that would love to embrace diversity and share resources and have a sustainable human situation on this planet. Because I feel the planet will be here with or without us. It's how do we as humans want to work with that? So the album touches on that, but it's more about how can we achieve world peace. And I think it's through our individual life experience.
Mm-hmm.
If we truly are at peace with our bloopers and are at peace with who we are, with our faults, with our talents, with our family, with our health and well-being, if we're truly at peace with all of the things that make us uniquely us, then we act differently in the world. We communicate differently and we are more peaceful to others.
Mm-hmm.
And so I think world peace is an inside job. And that's the album I'm trying to make right now, is an album that supports your personal liberation so that you can dance without anyone caring what you look like, and so that you can sing without judgment, so that you can try to go out and accomplish that project without fear, and so that you're willing to help other people because you know that they're suffering too. So I'm trying to put all of that into this masterpiece.
That's brilliant. World peace is an inside job.
Yeah, world peace is
That's
an inside
brilliant.
Job. And I feel like my songs are a reflection of the things I've tried to learn to give me peace throughout all these years, so that my brain doesn't win the war against unhappiness.
Right.
And music is a powerful tool that can liberate us through dance, through singing. The thing I love about singing is, and this is how it ties into yoga, is that singing is all about breath work. It's about conscious breathing.
Mm-hmm.
When we sing, we have to know when we're going to steal that breath so that we can stay in the song, and so that we can also have that long exhale of those notes that deliver a potent message or a beautiful tone that harmonizes with the people around us. And I say that because that's what I love about yoga, too. It's trained me in conscious breath work. And I think that's what I love about comedy, is because laughter is like, oh, you get reminded about your mm-hmm. breathing. And for some reason, a funny story causes us to breathe deeply mm-hmm. and rapidly. And it tickles us. It literally tickles us with our breath work. And if we, when we forget our breath, we are almost forgetting how beautiful life is, because, you know, that breath is our life force. We're breathing it in, and all of that continues to power us. And then we exhale it. It's what we do the day we're born. We take a big, deep breath, and we spring to life. And when we die, we exhale, and we breathe no more. Without breath, we are not alive. And so I love music because it connects us to that. Mm-hmm. It brings us in. So when we sing along with a song, we are alive, you know? It's like, it's why we feel so...
Yeah.
It's why we feel so good when we go to mm-hmm. a yoga class. It's because the brain doesn't have power over us anymore. We are taking control, not the brain. And we are training ourselves through this conscious breath work to just remember to breathe, remember to breathe, remember to breathe, no matter how painful it gets, mm-hmm. remember to breathe. We take that outside of the classroom, and we're... our brains are stronger, or our muscles are stronger, so that when the voice that says, I'm no good, well, now we're stronger because we just remember to breathe, remember to breathe, remember to breathe. And I think music helps us remember to breathe and can help us defeat those voices. And that's what I love about creative tasks is you put your attention on something, it's like you're remembering to breathe.
Yeah, you have to focus. And you focus by the rhythm of your breath.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you focus on painting this thing out, drawing this thing, because you know how you want it to look, and you're not going to let anything else stop you from doing that. Same with a song. Like, yeah, I'm going to sing the song till it ends, because it's a song, and we're going to be in it, you know? Even better, it's a whole album, or it's a whole concert, so we're in it, we're dancing, we're singing, we're having a blast.
Yeah.
It's a whole festival, it's all day long. Like, it just, it's on and on. And I'll leave you with this. It's something I try to take with me in my shows, in my work, whatever my work looks like. And I think even today, this is what my work looks like, because we're recording the sounds of our voices. It's going to land somewhere in the world, who knows where and when. That's what I love about recorded material, is people might discover this 10 years from now, and some seed in here might turn into something brilliant for someone else. So I'm happy I had a chance to share. And when I create work, I have a little mission mantra that I use, and that's E-I-E-I-O, just like the farmer. You know, old McDonald had a farm, E-I-E-I-O.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
And E-I-E-I-O is my acronym for entertain, inspire, educate, I am, and oh my God, that was the best thing I've ever seen or heard. So it's my goal when I create a show or a conversation or an album, that obviously I wanted to entertain you, because it should be your escape. It should be your delight to enjoy this art. I wanted to inspire you so that you say, wow, I want to do something like this mm-hmm. too in my life. I wanted to educate, like go deeper than just surface level egoic art, but like, what can I put in here that might go, wow, I never looked at the world that way before. I am is I really want the listener to see their own life in the work. Not only me show up and be authentic, but so much so that the listener goes, oh, wow, that's me, or I can do that too. And then obviously, oh my gosh, that's the coolest thing I've ever seen or heard. Like, I want them to just be so wowed by it. So that's me, E-I-E-I-O, the farmer and the musician.
That's awesome. How did you come up with that? Just one day?
Yeah, I play with words, mm-hmm. and I was working on a mission statement for a tour back in 2000-something, and I wanted to pump everybody up, mm-hmm. and I started to dabble more into the farm world, and gardening, growing fruit trees, and farming was definitely on the brain, so playing with words in farm, I came across E-I-A-O, and put my own spin on it.
I love it. That's brilliant.
Yeah.
And we all know E-I-E-I-O.
Absolutely. Exactly.
We all do.
Yeah.
Do you remember, I have one more thing to tell you. So remember when I interviewed you a couple years ago for the cover on Yoga Digest?
Yes.
Did I ever tell you that when I interviewed you, it didn't record?
Yes. I remember that.
And I thought of that because...
We chatted on the phone, right?
Yeah.
And it didn't record.
It didn't record, and I was
horrified.
You did a great
horrified. Job, though, on whatever you remembered.
I just thought of that because you brought up the EIEIO, and
we talked about that.
It was the most horrifying thing ever. So I had this interview... if you're listening, I had this interview with Jason. It was a couple years ago, and it's for a cover story. I'd never written a cover story before. And we talked on the phone for probably an hour and a half. Long time. Uh-huh. And I was getting on the plane to go to India, and I was going to transcribe everything on the plane. It's like mm-hmm. a 24-hour flight. Mm-hmm. I hit play, and nothing. Mm. And I looked at the numbers, and it recorded like 3 seconds of our conversation. I
better make sure this is
Jason, recording. I died.
We are still recording.
I died, yeah. So, good. Anyways, I wanted to add that in because I just couldn't stop thinking about that when you were sharing about the last end of that. Because I remember...
I think I touched on that last time.
Yeah. A little bit. You did, yeah. So, yeah. But anyways, I am just delighted to have gotten to interview you. And even more so, I just want to outwardly express that I'm just so incredibly honored that you invited me to your house to do this. You don't know how meaningful that is to me. It doesn't even seem to faze you, but it really made the biggest difference for me. And so I just wanted to make sure and acknowledge you for that. So
thank you.
And that you've recorded this for us on your amazing equipment here. You guys should see this room. It's full of lots of, it looks like a movie, like a room in a movie in here. Mm. There's so much equipment that's really cool. And that you're going to be putting this together for us. I'm so appreciative. Thank you.
You got it. My pleasure.